Welcome to the College Prep Genius Radio Show, where we can answer all your questions about getting college for free. Today, your host is Jean Burke, the author of College Prep Genius, The No-Brainer Way to SAT Success, and you can find her at collegeprepgenius.com. And I'm the moderator, Felice Gerwitz. Welcome. Well, hi and welcome. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and this is an episode of College Prep Genius Radio. And today on the line, I have Jean Burke with collegeprepgenius.com. And you can find more information about the podcast at collegeprepgenius.com/podcast. And this is podcast number 13. So you're going to want to go to that page and get all the show notes, because we are have a great show lined up for you. And one of the awesome things is that Jean is giving a $10 off coupon code. And so if you go to that page, you'll find more information about that. But the code is ULTIMATE, and that's ULTIMATE. And I guess that stands for Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, where this show resides. And so thank you so much, Jean, for that coupon code for everyone to be able to use.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, you know what, Jean? I am an affiliate of College Prep Genius. I think I was telling you at one point I would be sitting at the baseball field or softball field, and I would overhear mom saying something like, you know, oh, my son did so horribly, and I really need to get his SAT scores up. So I was, telling people about it, and then they asked me to bring the books the next time, and because I have your course, and I did. And, you know, I was laughing because I said, you know, off the cuff, I've probably sold, you know, 10 or 15 of your programs. And in fact, I could probably name the people, but it was so funny. And you said, well, did you know you could be an affiliate? And I said, no, I was just doing it because I believe in the program and it doesn't matter to me. So you guys, you know, when you check out her program, you're going to be like me. And now, you know, I realize that there is an affiliate program because Jean is just so sweet. She is, after all, from Texas and has that sweet accent. So, you know, do check it out, and you can find out more information about how you can sign up as an affiliate and then get a code that you can share with all of your friends. And then now, if you want to try the classes, you can. They're just awesome, and she's got a lot of information there, as well as being able to get Jean into your town. But today, Jean, we are going to be talking about preparing for the PSAT and SAT. And in this podcast in particular, we're going to talk about important things to know, critical reading and writing. And then we are going to follow up with episode 14 that we're going to talk about the math portion of the test, how the kids can prepare, as well as the day before. Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to a mom from Kentucky who emailed and said, I enjoy your show. Thanks, Jean, for putting together such a great program. So I wanted to give her a shout out, and I agree. Thank you so much, Jean, for taking the time and sharing your wealth of knowledge with all of us. So we're going to dig in today and start with, you know, this is a prep talk. You know, we're getting ready and gearing up to take the test. And, you know, probably, I know, Jean, you recommend, you know, starting way before, but let's say, you know, we have, you know, between 4 to 6 months maybe, or even a shorter period of time. So we're going to hone in on some of those things. And let's start with the most important thing. So what is really, really the nuts and bolts, and what is, you know, like the one thing we need to do to prepare for these tests?
Well, the number one thing is really to understand the test. I think that's where many, many students, as well as families, go wrong, is when they approach a test, let's say like an SAT or a PSAT or even an ACT, they approach it in the sense that, well, this is about what I know, or this is about how smart I am, or about my IQ. In reality, these are actually logic tests. And the questions are purposely designed to trick the students, and the wrong answers look so desirable, and it's really easy to fall for the wrong answer. So mm-hmm. students really need to realize that it's not something that you can study for. It's not like you have a bunch of content and you learn it and you memorize it and then you sort of regurgitate it back on the test. But, you know, if you're going to study for history, you know, you study it, you know, for history tests, you study history. If you're going to study for a geography test, you know, you study geography. If you're studying for a logic test, you need to study the logic behind the questions, how they're written, how the answers are written. You know, when the College Board writes these tests, they follow the same patterns every single time, same profile, same concepts, and that's why you can figure this test out. So it's really a matter of decoding the test, being able to look at a question and really find out what is it really asking me, so that I don't. It's not like what I think it's asking me, but what it's really asking me. So if we can have that mentality when we approach the test, it's going to change not only the way we train for the test, but it's going to change our scores. I mean, we can see scores go up hundreds and hundreds of points once you understand that this is not a normal test that you get at school.
Right. And you know what I have to say, as you were talking, I started thinking that before I met you and knew about College Prep Genius, I didn't really think my kids had much of a chance at doing well on the test because of all, you know, the things that you hear. And so I want to, you know, tell people to listen to episode 11, SAT Myths, if you want those dispelled. And so, you know, that was a concern of mine that, oh, my gosh, there's no way that my kids will do well. But that is, you know, not true because you have – these amazing techniques that you have really honed over the years, you know, just even working with your own kids. And one of the things I really like about your program is that, you know, we always said, oh, we have to learn vocabulary, and I had these cassettes, and I had these mnemonic devices, these cards I bought for like a gazillion dollars years ago. I forgot how much I spent, but like those cards float around, okay, and they were vocabulary words with different mnemonic devices. And not that any of those things are bad, but one of the things that you have is a set of novels that your kids helped you write and that have a lot of the vocabulary words, but they're in context. So the kids can read and figure out, you know, what that word means. And I thought that was brilliant when I saw that because, you know, I'm a novelist myself and my daughter and I wrote a series of novels. And when I looked at those books, I thought, you know, that's just brilliant. So something like that would definitely help the kids, won't it?
Right. Oh, yeah. And the fact that it's not a content-based test. Learning vocabulary words is a great thing, but, you know, I mean, there's 171,000 words in the dictionary, and so only the College Board knows which ones are actually going to be on the test. So you could learn several thousand words and then take the test and not one of them is on the test. So it really is knowing and understanding the logic behind the questions.
Very good, very good. Okay, so we need to understand the test, and there are the three parts of the test, so why don't you just quickly go over those?
Okay. Well, there are three sections on the SAT as well as the PSAT, and of course the SAT is changing in 2016 spring, and the PSAT this coming fall will be the new formatting. Great news is they're still just logic tests. They are tests about, you know, understanding and what is, you know, critical thinking, solving problems. And so what happens is there are three sections on the SAT right now. You've got critical reading, you've got math, and you've got writing. Now, when the test changes for the new formatting of the PSAT and then the new formatting of the SAT next year, you're simply going back to two sections, but they're really keeping pretty much the same stuff. So you're going to go from critical reading, math, and writing to math and critical reading, but the critical reading contains the writing section. So they're just simply combining those two. So when we talk about, you know, some of the sections today, just keep in mind that what you learn in the program now, it will be the same thing that you'll use even on the new formatting. Really all they're doing is just changing up the way the questions are written. But the first section is critical reading. And, you know, I have to tell you that this is the number one hated section of the test. And, you know, I don't blame kids for hating it because, in all honesty, right now you get basically up to four passages, 24 questions, and 25 minutes to do it in. So, you know, we're talking about a minute per question, and certainly that doesn't even count the passages. So there's no way kids are going to finish that on time. As a matter of fact, most students treat this section very much like English class. I mean, they'll read the passage, they'll try to interpret it, they'll try to analyze it. Not only do you not have that kind of time, these passages are purposely boring. So the students are getting bogged down with whatever the content is about. But the cool thing about the passages is very simple. There are three types of passages. There's a long passage, which contains several paragraphs. There's a short passage, which contains about one paragraph. And then there are what's called the dual passage section, which contains two completely different passages that somehow are connected by some sort of common topic. So they might agree or disagree with each other or maybe even complement one another. So what happens is when the students get to this section, they not only get bogged down by the passages, they don't understand the questions. And there are three types of questions in this section right now, as well as on the new test. You've got your line citation question, and this is where the question will cite a line. For example, what was the author thinking in line 12? The second type of question is called the vocabulary use question, and this is going to be asking you something about a use of a word, like what does the word help mean in line 4? And then you've got your overall passage question, which asks you something about the entire passage. In other words, what was the main idea of this passage? So once students understand that there are only three types of questions, and they put them and they're purposely out of order, and you change the order of them around, you can actually skip about 70% of that passage and still get every answer right.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it's crazy because this is a time test. You only get about a minute per question on the entire test. And so you have to understand that there is certainly a long way to answer every question, and then certainly there's a fast way. And I think in this section, too, there's another big problem that a lot of students run into, and that is students are really easily can second-guess themselves or overthink the question. So they often will read the question, and then they read the four or five answer choices now and four in the future, and they say, well, you know, A could work, but, you know, I think I can make B work or C could work, too. And so now they're overanalyzing everything, and they're going to ultimately get it wrong. But what the key to this section is the College Board uses the same four tricks, four same hidden wrong answer patterns from every question. So once a student reads the question, you don't read it and look for the right answer. You read the question and you mark off the four trick answers first, and that ultimately leaves you with the one right answer.
Very good, very good. And that's really what helped my kids, because I have one child who can skim and get it. You know, he reads really fast, and one child who doesn't. And she was, like, jumping up and down when she heard this section. I've never heard it, you know. I wish they got more excited about my school stuff. She was like, this is, like, so awesome. I don't have to read it all, you know. And so it does really help. And, you know, it's like all the stuff, oh, I wish I knew this. You know, my SAT scores would have been higher. But what I love about this, what you're teaching them here, Jean, these are life skills. Because they can take this on to college, they can take this, you know, in the workplace, and really use this. Because once you understand what the questions are, you know, and how they're being formed, it really does teach you. Like, this is critical thinking in a nutshell. It really does help to have that. And did you, when you were, you know, learning about this with your kids, because you were learning alongside your children as they were preparing to take the test, is this the patterning, is that something you were actually looking for, or did it finally hit you when you were, you know, looking at it so many different times?
It basically hits you because you start, after a while, start seeing the same thing. And that's the whole definition of the word standardized. When, you know, when a company like the College Board or even the American College Test writes a test, they have to do two things. One, they have to make sure that it is a test design that anybody can do well on, because, you know, a 4.0 at one high school is not the same 4.0 at another. And what can I learn in Texas is not what you learn in Florida. And so they have to create it in a way that it normalizes everyone to where anybody can read a question and be able to answer it no matter where you learned, where you went to school, what state you live in. And then they also have to follow the same patterns every time. And that is why after a while, the more you start seeing the test, the patterns just start jumping out at you and you start seeing the same thing recurring over and over again. And that's why it's called the standardized test. So yeah, it's definitely something other. I mean, it's not a random test. I mean, if it was random, then you couldn't rely on it. You wouldn't know what was going to be on it, and it couldn't be a test that you could figure out. And because colleges go up on their rankings nationally based on the test scores, the higher the score, the more money you get because ultimately you make them look good. So that is why high scores can yield unbelievable scholarship money.
That's awesome, that's going to segue into a question that we had from one of our listeners and a mom from Rhode Island. And I'm going to go ahead and read the question, but I want you to hold your answer, Jean, till we come back because we're almost out of time and I need to get to a commercial. So a mom from Rhode Island asked, what's a good score for scholarship opportunities on the PSAT and SAT? So hold that thought. We will be right back in just a moment.
With College Prep Genius, free college can happen to you. That's right. It's never too early to start thinking about test prep to secure your future. Imagine getting free tuition, room and board, free grad school, and more based on your SAT score. College Prep Genius is the key to free. This award-winning, nationally featured program teaches students the logic behind the SAT. You'll learn to answer every question in 30 seconds, raise your score as much as 600 points, and go to the college of your dreams for free. Visit College Prep Genius to know more.
Well, hi and welcome back. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and this is an episode of College Prep Genius Radio. And with me on the line is Jean Burke, who has been doing a fabulous job, Jean, on explaining the parts of just even the critical reading section. Before we went on break, we had a question from a mom from Rhode Island, and I'll go ahead and repeat that. She wanted to know, what is a good score for scholarship opportunities for the PSAT and the SAT?
That's a good question. And, you know, every college is different. So the great thing about nowadays with the internet is you can generally go to most colleges' websites, and they tend to list not only the test score just to get into their college, but they also tend to have levels. So, you know, a certain college might say, you know, 1050 is what we need out of 1600 just to get into our school. But, you know, if you have a 1200, we'll give you a partial scholarship. If you've got 1300, we'll give you half. If you've got 14, we'll give you a full ride. So it's really good to check, you know, if you've got two or three colleges in mind just to see what their site says. But as a general rule, where some major, really great scholarships will come into play for a lot of colleges is on the SAT, you try to want to get at least around a 1400 out of a 1600, and that would be the math and critical reading sections if they're looking at those two. Now, certainly Ivy Leagues are more top-tier schools. It may be more, and they'll probably be counting all three sections. As far as the PSAT, funny thing is it really depends on what state you live in. Because right now the new PSAT coming up, they have not come up with a scoring system as of yet. But what I can do is I can tell you about the past scoring system, and that is all three sections were worth 240 at the most, so 80 points for all three sections. And it really depends on what state you live in. So, for example, you know, West Virginia, you know, had the cutoff score for national merit semifinalists was around a 201, but then you go to Texas, and last year it was a 218, but Florida was a 211. It really depends on how many kids are taking the test and how well they do from each state. So you could live in one state and be a national merit and go to another state, have the exact same score, and not be one. So, again, you know, we don't know the new scoring rubric yet, but it really, if it's anything like the old one, it's going to come down to probably, you know, where you live.
Right. And so that's really important, is to really look at the college that you want to go to. I think that's great. And You know, we have a thing called Bright Futures. It's Florida Bright Futures, and they have the same thing as far as, like, GPA. And so you have to have a certain amount. Plus, they also threw in the test as well. Because at one point, it was just GPA. And like you said, it's so varied depending on, you know, where you're going to school. And so now they've changed it. And they've also lowered how much they will give. That's important because they do, it's like a, you know, for this score, you get this much money, and for this score, you get this much money. And of course, having a GPA, that's good as well. So,
right.
Look to see if your state has that kind of scholarship opportunities, because there's a lot of money that's just sitting out there that people don't know about. So,
it's
very
so
good.
True.
Very good. Yeah.
True. And I've got a lot of kids in Florida. Yeah. A lot of my students there got Bright Futures or full rides, and it is true. Like Georgia has like the Hope Scholarship, and Alaska has like the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And not every state has something, one of those kind of programs, but a lot of them do. And so you're right. It's important to check into your own particular area.
Okay. Well, let's look at the writing section. I know people are discounting it and saying, oh, well, we don't need that anymore. In fact, just recently, on a website my kids have up for their sports, they weren't even asking for the writing portion. And I was looking at it going, but Jean said, you know, it's important because you were talking about the importance. But anyway, I'll let you have at it. So first, let's go an overview of what it is and, you know, why you consider it still something that we need to be aware of and consider it really important to tackle.
Right. Well, the writing section right now on the SAT, there are four parts. There's the sentence error, improving sentences, improving paragraphs, and, of course, the dreaded essay. Now, on the PSAT, again, very similar with no essay. Now, when they change it next year, what they're doing is they are basically taking the critical reading and combining it with the writing section and making the essay optional. Now, right now, it's not optional. Here's why it's so important. And even though I do realize that a lot of schools, even right now under the old SAT, don't necessarily accept the writing portion, they're still taking the math and critical reading, but there are plenty of colleges who do take it, especially some of the top-tier schools. But the bottom line is, if a college admissions counselor is on the fence about your child's application, they will use the writing section as a determining factor. So it is very, very important to do that. And then, of course, with the new SAT, the redesign test in 2016, the writing is actually combined in with the critical reading, so you can't get away from it. Now, they are making the essay optional. Again, you know, most students are probably going to take that as, oh, yay, I don't have to write the essay. But again, still write that essay because it can determine the difference between either getting in at college or not getting in it or getting the scholarship or not. So don't use that as a license to not do it. But right
and
now the essay – sorry.
Hold on. Could you not submit that portion if you didn't do really well on it, or would you still have to submit all of it?
Submit all of it. The College Board takes all your scores together and combines them. But, you know, most it doesn't matter because colleges are going to take the highest scores anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Right.
But don't worry about that. But right now, the way the essay is designed, students are given 25 minutes. They're given a topic they have no clue on, and it's going to end up being worth 30% of their grade. So it seems like a lot of pressure, but let's be honest, these judges only spend about 30 seconds max grading each essay. And again, that's not necessarily saying what a great, amazing writer your child is. That's taking thousands of very subjective papers and coming up with a very objective grading system. So basically what they're going to do is they're going to skim through that paper one time pretty quickly, and then they're going to write down their first impression, which is anywhere from a 1 to 6. So you've got, in that short amount of time that they're skimming this paper, you know, you just need a few key things that they're looking for, you know, sounding smart and having a good razzle-dazzle and that sort of thing. And so, again, it's going back to the fact that colleges are looking at how well can a student, under pressure, in a short amount of time, come up with a very logically smart sounding paper. So that's really all they're testing. It's not so much your writing ability. But the essay doesn't, exemplify what, that you're this incredible writer. It really does exemplify, how well can you go the second mile? How well can you, take this topic and just absolutely come up with an outstanding paper? So, even though the new essay of next year will be a bit different because you will have a piece of writing that you will read and that your essay will come from that. Again, it's still very, very similar in the sense that, again, they're going to be looking for just a few key things when they're looking at those good essays. Now, the other three parts of the essay, writing section on the SAT right now are basically grammar and style problems. So your sentence error is where you're going to be given a sentence that has four underlined portions, and you've got to find out if there's an error with one of the underlined portions. Now, the good news is that's all you have to do. I mean, it's not like you have to determine anything else that's wrong with that sentence. A lot of students want to rewrite the sentence and make it better, but that's not your job. Your job is only to see if there's an error in those four underlined portions. If there's no error,
wow,
you just pick no error. And then in the improving sentences section, and what's different about this as far as the new section, is right now you have a standalone sentence where part of it's underlined, and then you're given, five answer choices, and you have to find the best restatement. Well, the cool thing is usually about 60% of answers you don't even have to read because there's a recurring pattern that the college board uses make you obviously know which ones are the wrong answers that you can mark them off immediately. On the new test, you will have a very similar sentence that's underlined, but it will be inside of a paragraph. So you're still having to look at the underlined portion and find the best restatement. And the same thing with the improving paragraph section. Again, it's basically combining critical reading and improving sentences by simply just taking a passage that has every sentence underlined every sentence is numbered, and students will basically answer questions corresponding to those sentences. So, again, you're not getting out of the writing portion on the new test. You're just simply combining it with the critical reading.
Yeah, very good. And what I like, though, in the advice that you're giving is ways to make it manageable. Because when you look at that amount of time, the first thing the kids are going to think is there's just no way. And because you break it down into this is exactly what you're looking for and here are the different types, that makes it manageable, and then they can budget for their time. Is this the same as far as if you don't know it, you just skip it, and right now you will not be penalized for leaving it blank?
In the future, this is a very crucial strategy that I have to emphasize. Right now, on the existing SAT, there is a penalty for guessing. So let's say you guess wrong, you get points taken away. The 2016 redesigned SAT, they are removing the guessing penalty. But I really must stress to students, and you probably won't hear this from a lot of people, but it's a very important strategy. Even if there's not a penalty for guessing, still do not guess. Ever, ever, ever. And let me tell you why. When you take the test, every time you get an answer correct, you get what's called 1 point for the raw score. And then what they do with that 1 point is they convert that 1 point raw score to the scaled score, which is anywhere from 200 to 800. Now, based on the bell curve, each question that you get right, that 1 point raw score, is converted to anywhere from 10 to 40 points. So obviously the ideal goal is to get the answer right, not so much guess and hope you get it right, even if there's a penalty or not. So in the future, when it's no penalty for guessing, the key is to look at the question. If you kind of give it a quick glance and look at it and go, I don't really know this question, I'm not really sure, put a star on it or circle it and move on and go answer as many questions as you can in that time frame. Because you only get, like I say, about a minute per question, and every question is worth 1 point, regardless of whether it's easy, medium, or hard. And then if you've got time left over, then come back to that question because so many times our subconscious is still working on that problem, even if we've moved on. And so you can often come back to it and go, oh, okay, good, I see it now. Great, that makes sense now. Because the goal is to get it right. What happens is students start guessing or just bubbling in any old number. Before you know it, you've guessed on so many questions that you don't even know that you've guessed on them. And that's not the goal. The goal is certainly to get them right.
Right. And then it also takes time to guess, you know, and you're wasting valuable time where you could be applying it on trying to figure out the right answer. So,
yes.
You know, I agree with that. Okay, so anything else we want to add to this podcast before we are almost out of time here?
Well, the great thing about the test is, you know, we talked about seeing the patterns and taking it more than one time and colleges taking the higher scores. Well, most colleges will give students what is called a super score. And that's where, you know, you might take the thinking, maybe you bombed the writing section one time. Okay, no big deal. Because they might take a high math section from one test and a high critical reading from another and even a high writing from another test and give you the ultimate composite score, which is a super score, which, of course, is more money for the students. And the great thing is, you know, is score choice allows the students to pick the scores that they want to send in and send them in whenever they want. So that is why it's a good idea to keep taking the test as many times as you want.
Yeah, totally. That's true. And that's my kids are one going on her third time, and the other is going to be taking the PSAT for the first time in 10th grade. He's a 10th grader. I have to stop myself because he's a different grade in his home school, but he's a higher grade level. But he's 10th grade test-wise. And so, because I'm not graduating him early as per his request, not mine, but that's okay. We'll do some dual enrollment while we're working at finishing up some things. And so, you know, and I want to share with you guys to go back and listen to the PSAT recording that Jean has done. I think she's done several on the collegeprepgenius.com/podcast because I, like many others, thought that the PSAT really wasn't worth taking, which is one of the reasons why, you know, my daughter and several kids have not taken it. So Mike's breaking that mold, and he's going to be taking it upcoming, and then he'll get to take it again in 11th grade. And again, you know, just so thankful to Jean for sharing the information and you know, that we can take it more than once. And a lot of times people would say, oh, no, if you do that, it's going to, you know, you're going to do worse than you did, or you're only going to improve by 100 points. Well, 100 points might be the difference between a scholarship or not. And Jean, you know, you have laid claim to, you know, they can raise their scores up to, you know, 500 or 600 points. But, you know, it's work, right, Jean? I mean, you've talked about this before about, you know, this is your job. You know, instead of getting a summer job, this is your job. And you could earn, you know, so much in scholarship money if you just take this test seriously and implement some of the great advice that Jean has given.
Right. And you know what? I mean, there is no instant success. Anything mm-hmm. worth getting in life, it does take work. And, you know, I wish I could just kind of, you know, by osmosis, you know, give you all the answers and strategies in your head. But it is a matter of learning them and then reinforcing them by practicing and starting to see the pattern. So, but it does pay off. I mean, when you can get 100, 200,000 plus scholarships, ultimately, you know, not only use these strategies just for SATs and PSATs or even ACTs, but, I mean, they work on AP tests and they work on GREs and they work on subject tests. You know, I've got kids who've gone to med school for free, law school for free. So just thinking is
wonderful.
A skill. It's a skill. And that's why, you know, it's important that we incorporate it to our school.
Wonderful. Well, I just love talking to you, Jean, because you're always so enthusiastic about this. And it probably can get tedious at times. But, you know, to us, it's all new information, and we're excited. So, hey, thanks so much for being on the show today. And I look forward to doing the second part of this show, which is the math section, as well as prep for the day before and the day of test taking. Thanks again, Jean. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for listening to College Prep Genius. You can find more episodes at collegeprepgenius.com/show or listen on iTunes or your favorite podcast app on your phone, on your computer, on the go. Just remember, visit collegeprepgenius.com for more information.